Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Well, very welcome back. Well, sentencing in Ireland is undergoing profound change. That's according to my next guest, Professor Tom O'Malley from the University of Galway. Professor O'Malley delivered the School of Law's annual distinguished lecture on the topic last night, and he joins me now from our Galway studio. Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Good morning.
Listen, you delivered this paper last night on the future of sentencing. And you said our sentencing is going under profound change and a rapid pace. What are the main changes that are happening?
Well, I think what I was referring to there is the fact that we now have more guided and structured sentencing than we had in the past. Traditionally, the sentencing system in this country revolved around judicial discretion. The head judge decided in each case what the appropriate sentence was, subject to whatever maximum sentence might be set out by law. And a good deal of that still exists, but during the last 10 years or so, there have been far more sentencing guidelines issued by the higher courts, the Court of Appeal and the Supreme Court, which provides more guidance for judges as to what the appropriate sentences are for a number of serious offences, including manslaughter, rape, burglary and various others. But in addition to that, as a result of legislation that was passed in 2019, we will soon have, or gradually over the next number of years, have more formal guidelines, because a sentencing guidelines and information committee has been established that will, if you like, establish guidelines for different offences, we believe, that courts will be, generally speaking, required to follow. So therefore, what we have seen in the space of a decade or so is quite a significant transition from a system that was almost entirely discretionary to one that will become increasingly more structured and more guided. So that was what I was talking about.
Yeah, because I suppose the task for judges at time can be a delicate one. You know, yeah. It's objective because they've got the maximum sentence, and even where they do have guidelines, they have to tailor a sentence to the offence and also to the personal circumstances of the person who committed it. So I suppose that level of discretion is perhaps necessary, but invariably in this system, we're not the only country obviously that has it. There have been complaints about inconsistency in the past, people saying that sentence is overly lenient or probably less so overly severe, but certainly when people get agitated about sentencing, it's because of these complaints, mostly but not exclusively, about undue leniency.
Sometimes it is, yes. As you said there, we're not the only country that has had to address this problem. And yes, inconsistency has been an issue, which of course is one of the reasons why there has been this move towards guidelines. It began in America back in the 1980s. England and Wales have had it since, for the past 20 years or so. And we are now, if you like, going that direction as well. But of course, you're absolutely right in what you say. I mean, the expression that's often used is what we need are guidelines, not tramlines. In other words, the guidelines themselves should be sufficiently flexible to allow a judge to impose an appropriate sentence in light of the particular circumstances of a case, in the sense that if there is some exceptional factor in a case that warrants a departure from the guideline, well then judges should be, and indeed will be, still permitted to do that.
And even, I suppose, Tom, where judges get it wrong, there are appellate systems, there's checks and balances in place to do it. Often when we have a very high-profile case, I think the vast majority of sentences we don't know about, we don't agitate about, but it leads to calls for mandatory minimum terms and, you know, things like this, where people get very, very agitated about us. But in your talk last night, what you were actually talking about was, which something might be controversial for some, is actually maybe that we need a new course to perhaps moderate our sentences and not be agitating for ever harsher, ever more punitive, ever longer sentences.
Yeah, I mean, there are two things really what you have said there. First of all, yes, sometimes when a sentence is perceived to be unduly lenient, there will be a lot of criticism about that. But what people very often forget is that the Director of Public Prosecutions has a power, which she exercises quite frequently, to refer an undue lenient sentence to the Court of Appeal, and the Court of Appeal can then increase it, which I might add, it very often does. What I was talking about in terms of moderating sentences has to do with the reality of the situation that we're in as far as imprisonment is concerned. There has been a very significant increase in the number of prisoners, serving prisoners in this country over the last couple of years, but even over the last year. For example, last week, I think we had about 4,500 prisoners in custody, which would have been about 600 more than you had the same time last year. The prison system overall was operating at 104% capacity, and there were some individual prisons, especially the women's prison in Limerick, that were operating vastly over capacity. And my argument is that in the present climate, that situation is unlikely to improve. You know, the number of prisoners is likely to increase rather than decrease, and therefore the question is, what can be done about it? Now, one obvious solution that some people might say is, let's build more prisons. Well, of course, there are serious logistical difficulties about that. First of all, the length of time it takes, and also to what extent it really solves the crime problem in any long-term way.
So when you talk about moderating prison sentences, is that reducing them?
Yeah, I mean, in the sense, imposing a prison sentence that is as short as is necessary in the circumstances. Because, again, very often people tend to look at prison sentences without always recognising the experience of being in prison. And of course, the experience of being in prison can vary enormously depending on what kind of prison you're in. Is it an open prison, for example? Is it one where there's overcrowded, harsh conditions? So, you know, it isn't necessarily the case that a sentence of 6 years is twice as severe as a sentence of 3 years. It's the experience of being in prison itself for some appreciable period of time that constitutes the real punishment. So therefore, what I'm saying is we have to look at ways of using imprisonment as little as possible, though there are many circumstances where it has to be used, but trying to make sentences as short as possible, but also developing a more effective parole system.
Can I just ask about that maximum sentencing, because it's often something that politicians and the public reach for, particularly perhaps in the wake of a particularly egregious case, and that is the thing that we reach for. I suspect it would be very, very difficult to push back on that. People seem to think that maximum sentencing is effective. Do you think there should be a review of maximum sentencing, and how low would you go for certain offences?
Well, first of all, bear in mind that maximum sentences are not the same as mandatory sentences. Mm. The maximum sentence is the amount that's set out by legislation. It's a political decision. Is the highest sentence that may be imposed for an offence, and then it's up to a court to sentence the individual cases accordingly. What people are very often asking for is what we call mandatory minimum sentences. In other words,
in the UK, so for example, you might be told you can't get out before 20 years, or you can't get out, you know, before a certain time.
Well, that's just in the UK. That's just for murder, where everybody convicted of murder gets a life sentence, but they have to be, the judge will decide how long they have to stay in prison before they're eligible to be considered for release. We don't have that in this country, except under our recent parole legislation, a person who is serving a life sentence for anything, whether it's murder or, let's say, serious sex offences, and you'd have a few of those serving life sentences, well, then they don't become eligible to be considered for release until they have served at least 12 years. However, for other prison sentences, you know, at the moment, release is largely discretionary. Everybody is entitled to one quarter reduction on their sentence by way of remission, but it is possible to get released earlier through an informal system of temporary release. But in relation to mandatory minimum sentences, we did have some of those for drug offences, but they have now been abolished. And unfortunately, they do cause problems because they're not always very just. You know, there are many people who will come before the courts who will have to get one of those sentences, but who doesn't really deserve it. So it's far better to have guidelines, which we will have, than to have these rigid mandatory sentences that people sometimes argue for.
And let's talk about parole then, Tom O'Malley, because actually, despite all of the talk about it, very, very few people are eligible for it. Do you think that that needs to be expanded? I think you have to be in prison for quite a considerable period of time before you can even apply to become eligible for parole, which suggests it's only there for quite serious offences.
That is true. I mean, there was a Parole Act introduced in 2019, and it does two things. First of all, it deals with life sentence prisoners. As I say, they are eligible to be considered for release once they have served 12 years. It was never clear to me how that 12-year figure was arrived at. That system is up and running. I don't know how it's working, but I know that the parole board is hard at work itself in dealing with those cases. But of course, they're only a minority of the people serving life sentences are only a minority of the prison population. What we don't have is a parole system as yet for people who are serving what we call determinate sentences, let's say sentences of 2 years or 6 years or 10 years or whatever. The Act provides that the minister is entitled to make rules that would permit people serving those sentences to be considered for parole, but only if they're serving 8 years or longer. And my argument last night was effectively that that system needs to be revised so that, as in most other countries, anyone who is serving a sentence of, let's say, 2 or 3 years or more should be eligible to be considered for parole when they have served perhaps half of it. Again, what I want to emphasise very strongly here is that what I'm talking about is a person being eligible to be considered for parole. It's not about the wholesale release of prisoners. It's simply that people who can safely be released and who will be under the supervision of the probation service until the remainder of their sentence has been served out in the community, that there is a lot to be said for having that kind of parole system, which would go some distance at least towards reducing the pressure on the prison population.
And that, of course, Tom O'Malley, would require a lot of more resourcing and support for bodies such as the probation service. One of the other issues you addressed last night was it wasn't just the future of sentencing. I think the title of your paper was The Future of Sentencing and Regulation, because, of course, a lot of sanctions, particularly in financial services, don't actually perhaps come through the courts, which can be very, very difficult to prosecute, but that regulators are also imposing sanctions. So do we need to look at that whole system of regulation as well?
Well, certainly there's no doubt about it that it's kind of the hidden aspect of punishment in this country, if you like. What I was saying effectively was this. I mean, I wasn't necessarily criticising the regulators, but there's no doubt that regulators now, I'm talking about bodies like the Central Bank and the Data Protection Commission, the Competition and Consumer Affairs Commission and so on, gradually over the years, they have been given very, very extensive powers to impose penalties. They may sometimes be called settlements, but they're effectively penalties which can run to millions, tens of millions or more of euro on mainly corporate bodies, sometimes perhaps individuals, but principal corporate bodies who have engaged in various kinds of financial malpractice. And I was just saying that it is important that we be aware of this, that we look critically and carefully at how those amounts are actually arrived at, because they simply, they don't have to follow the same kind of principles or laws that a court would have, but that they should still be proportionate. And I was simply saying that people like myself who work in this area need to be thinking more about punishment overall rather than simply sentencing in the criminal courts. And that's something that we have to kind of devote more attention to in the future.
Yeah, and it's something that has some unease sometimes for members of the public, because they think it's very, very difficult, or they perceive it to be very, very difficult to affix criminal responsibility to
yes,
a company.
Indeed.
And in terms of that, because one of the things we often hone in on are the regulatory penalties, are they a little bit, do we get it right? Are they too high, too low, or do you think they're just right working in that area?
Well, one of the points I was making really is that I personally don't know, and I suppose very few people do know, because it depends. In terms of getting it right, it depends on precisely what criteria you're following and what criteria you're applying. And indeed, in some cases, I've no doubt that the regulatory bodies in question do have criteria which they do apply. But what we have to be aware of is that they are, some of the penalties are very, very high indeed, and perhaps that there is a bit, there's a need for a bit more perhaps transparency and a bit more investigation and research into how exactly those penalties are being set and how consistent they are with one another. Whether, for example, one regulatory agency tends to penalise people more severely than another or more leniently than another, as the case may be. So what I was calling for essentially was for, if you like, a more to have more research and more kind of scrutiny, if you like, of the penalties and the procedures for imposing those penalties by regulatory bodies.
And before you go, Tom O'Malley, penal moderation and increasing eligibility for parole, how do you think that public debate would play out in circumstances where, as I say, politicians are often feel that they need to move for those tougher things like, you know, mandatory minimum sentence, maximum terms? How can we change the conversation?
Well, I think first of all, I would end if you like, on an optimistic note or a positive note. In this country, we have done quite well in the sense that we haven't been going for mandatory minimum sentences and mandatory sentences to anything like the same extent that other countries have, such as the United States, especially Canada and various other countries. We do have, overall, in this country, a fairly moderate sentencing system already. But in terms of setting maximum sentences, I think that politicians need to be aware that the higher they set a maximum sentence, the longer prison terms for that particular offence are going to be, because courts have to have regard to the maximum sentence when they're selecting specific penalties to make sure that they're proportionate, having regard to the maximum. So I think that politicians and the government and so on, when attaching maximum penalties to new offences, should make them as low as they conceivably can. Now, some of them will have to be high, but that they shouldn't be high unless they have to be in light of the serious nature of the offence in question.
Well, it was a fascinating lecture. Professor Tom O'Malley from the University of Galway and Senior Counsel, thank you very, very much for joining us. We'll take a quick break.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.